Tyla and Douglas Gabriel here. Today we're going to review a piece that Douglas has prepared for us. It's entitled The Gospel of St. John as Mystery Wisdom. Douglas began the article by pulling a Steiner quote, which reads, "The Gospel of St. John contains the wisdom of the God and man, Theosophia, and the more that men devote themselves to the study of this document, the more will they receive wisdom and enlightenment from it." Douglas, why was this so important for you to present to everyone?
Well, Tyla, as you know, we sit around up in the tree and look out on the world like Odin and Frigg of the Norse mythology, and we discuss what humanity is doing and what we can do to help. And it seemed as if at one point humanity was helpless. It was hopeless. You know, we knew immediately the second the shots were coming out that they were from BioNTech and what they really meant. And we knew that we were in an apocalyptic challenge of our times. And so we would discuss, what can we do? What can we do? And I must admit that it was extremely frustrating until you finally said, well, just approach it from the point of view of the individual consciousness and their own spiritual development. So then that led to three articles that we put together, one on the karma of untruthfulness. And in there, we discussed what happens when people lie, when untruths become the commonplace of our time, which has happened. Basically, people run away from truth. It is a post-truth age. It's falsehood politics. We found laws that say that anyone who is a politician can lie in Congress, in the Senate or in the House. It doesn't matter. Whatever they say can be a lie. We find out that, you know, mainstream media is not culpable for their lies. And so you find that what are lies? They build phantoms around the people who speak them. If they get bigger and reach more people, then specters are created. And those specters literally roam from person to person, convincing them of the lies. And then if they become laws, actual demons come in. So if we were going to combat what we're seeing in our age, some of these are because there are laws that allow them. Well, how can that be? We had to first wake people up and let them understand the karma of untruthfulness.
And the people who've been with us for many, many years have seen that we went into the swamp, we pulled out, we showed you what was going on there so that you could see for yourself. But, you know, you talk about the specters, that they don't even have to wait until they become laws for them to be deadly. Because think of the specter of the lie of vaccinations and how they're going to take care of you and all the people that bought that into that specter. And they are now dying or will die because of the bioweapon that was injected into them after the mainstream media and politicians propagandized them to take that action.
Pharmaceutical companies wrote the laws concerning what we do during a pandemic. Well, what is that? Those are actual demons coming in. And so when you're talking about the karma of untruthfulness, for instance, the pharmaceutical companies are should be called the petrochemical pharmaceutical companies, because all they do is mimic nature with petrochemical, man-made, patentable substances, all of which have side effects, which means none of them are addressing the cause, they're only addressing the symptom, and that's the karma of untruthfulness. If we can't understand what is true and what is not true in our age, if you do not have the capacity for discernment, then now, unfortunately, it is a matter of life and death, without any exaggeration whatsoever. If you don't have the discernment to understand that the fake vaccine being given out now can kill you, then you didn't seem to notice that on the VAER, the CDC reports 5,000 deaths directly attributable to the shot in America. The same type of collection device in Europe for the World Health Organization says there's 10,000 Europeans have died from it. So if you don't have discernment, if you can't read through the karma of untruthfulness, you can't see the fact that your decisions can cause life and death. And then the second article was on the evil of materialism. And what we give as the third article is the antidote to the evil of materialism. But in the article on the evil of materialism, we pointed out that around 1840, materialism reached its peak. And really, the best analogy for this is a Buddhist analogy. When Buddha was sitting under the Bodhi tree, as his sign of enlightenment, his right hand touched the ground and touched the earth, and his left hand came up and held its first finger where from there he then gave the teachings of the turning of the wheel of Dharma. But the point is that he was sitting under the tree and he'd been tempted by Mara or Maya, the being of illusion, the being of delusion, who can turn into any form whatsoever. That's what materialism is. And in today's age, we have hyper-materialism. So you can create synthetic versions of anything that you desire and or the real thing. It just depends if you have the money. So here's Buddha sitting under the tree. And who has to be the ultimate witness to Buddha's enlightenment? The being of materialism, the being Maya, the being of illusion. If you believe that the material world is all there is, then you believe in Maya, you worship her. And she's going to lead you down a path of delusion. And that's why science gives us temporary theories to make us feel better, that as we're going down the path of materialism, where we say there is no spirit, there's barely a soul, and there is no striving of the soul to meet its own spirit. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about what happens inside of each one of us. And so materialism is happening in us. Now, cosmically, we can discuss that too. In 1840, in heaven, there was another replication of the war in heaven that happened with Lucifer and the archangel Michael, who cast him from heaven with after being given the sword of God. Because Lucifer's pride, and remember the seven deadly sins are simply what happened to Lucifer. His pride, his envy, his jealousy, his greed, his lust, his avarice, his gluttony, and his hatred, I added a few extra, but the seven deadly sins basically led Lucifer to his fall. Well, that happened again in the heavens, in the basically the realm of the sun, where the Mother Lodge is. There's the Sun Mother Lodge in heaven, and that is where Michael, who is the archangel of the sun, who is the countenance of Christ, who is now the archai of our time since 1879. So after the war in heaven in 1840, Michael came to earth with many of the followers who had been in the school of Michael, and that's who led us into the beginning of the Satya Yuga, or the Age of Light, and we left behind the Dark Ages that are described in the Hindu philosophy. But in 1879, materialism really, literally, Ahriman and his gang of Asuric devils came to the earth, and they started possessing people's minds until their minds could only believe in the five senses, couldn't believe in the higher senses or supersensible organs or supersensible actions, even though almost all scientific facts, gravity, strong force, weak force of attraction, electricity, light, they're all invisible. They're all affect the world, and we can look at the effects that they have, but we do not know their cause. And so materialism is an age of hollow lies, because the science of our day, which is called settled science, is only settled for a few minutes until the newest discovery supplants the old theory. So we are coming into the age of the Satya Yuga, where the Kalki avatar, the 10th incarnation of Vishnu, according to the Hindu philosophy and the Puranas, state that this being comes and she, because many of the stories say that the Kalki avatar is a female, she chops off the heads of the ignorant. So you're thinking, wait a second, the Age of Light, they're going to chop off the heads of the ignorant? Yes, this isn't going to be a picnic, folks. The descriptions of the apocalypse are ancient. They go back to a Hebrew tradition that was long before Christ and long before St. John wrote his book of Revelation or the Apocalypse. And so we put in the third article, which is on St. John's wisdom, many examples of Gnostic writers who claim their authority through the apostles, disciples, and followers of Christ, wrote gospels, epistles, the sayings of Jesus, conversations with Jesus, and many apocalypses. And remember that Daniel, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Enoch, many of them were translated into heaven, but before that, they had an apocalypse, they had an initiation. And that's what we need to focus on with the works of John. What's in the Gospel of John, we also find repeated in the Gospel, in the book of Revelation, because that is a book demonstrating a long tradition of what happens when you get initiated, when you rise up to the seventh heaven and you get to banquet or commune with or eat with the gods and goddesses or whatever you see your deity to be, because the apocalypse, that tradition goes through all the different religions of the world, as well as mythologies. So this rising up to have this dinner is what the apocalypse is about. And in the end, it is a beautiful story. So in this, we selected from St. John's Apocalypse the most beautiful passages that are ignored, because just like in our times, we are overwhelmed by the ugliness of our age. Truth, beauty, goodness can hardly be found. The opposite is worshipped, as I pointed out. Delusion, Maya, the being of illusion. In other words, the being Lucifer, the being that convinces you that all of this is real and that this is the only reality. There's nothing that is spiritual. There's nothing that goes on after death. There was nothing that went on before birth. And that right now, if you believe that and you have an awakened consciousness, then it's going to lead you to nihilism. It's going to lead you to helplessness, hopelessness, feeling as if you are wandering without any recourse and that you are overwhelmed by the circumstances of your times and by the circumstances of your life. Is that not a description of our times? And so we thought that if we showed you the apocalypse for what it truly is, and you saw through the seven letters to the churches, the seven vials, the seven bowls, the seven trumpets, all of these different horrible seven things, don't forget the seven candelabras, which are the chakras that have been lit up in the proper way by St. John, and that helped him get up into the higher heavens. Without those, he couldn't have seen the 24 elders. He couldn't have seen the throne, the lamb that defeats the beast and defeats the dragon, and the lady who comes who has a son with an iron rod who rules the age. If you don't read the glorious, triumphant aspects of the Apocalypse of St. John, you can be weighted down, just like we are in our age, with all of the untruthfulness and with its karma, with its phantoms, with its specters, with its demons, as well as with the materialism that darkens your brain. If you believe in only materialism, secular humanism, you are going to only believe in things. Well, things will lead you to gray thoughts, and none of them are original, and none of them lead you to the thoughts of higher beings. Our thoughts can commune with the thoughts of higher beings, but they won't until you go through an initiation like John goes through, and that's why you study that book. But in our own times, because we've crossed the threshold and because fear, doubt, and hatred have risen up as the three evil aspects of ourselves as we cross the threshold, we don't have faith, hope, and love. But if you had faith, hope, and love, you could cross the threshold and begin to learn the language of the Spirit and commune through your own initiation. And that's the glory of what the Gospel of John is about. And what I'm about to tell you is the mysteries of many, 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 many different groups that are hidden. It's the esoteric. They call it the occult. And these things sound crazy, but if you look into the traditions, you'll see that they're there. They're even in the paintings of the great painters, that there's actually two Jesus children. But anyway, the part that we're going to talk about, the mystery traditions of St. John's, not the two Jesus children, but we're going to talk about the raising of Lazarus. Martha, Mary of Magdalene, and Lazarus of Magdalene, and Martha of Magdalene lived in a beautiful home that was given to them by their parents, but they also had an uncle, and he was Joseph of Arimathea. Well, beautifully enough, Tyla put the picture of Edith Marion at the heading of this article on St. John's, on the St. John's Gospel and St. John's Book of Revelation. And in this picture, Rudolf Steiner told Edith Marion what to paint. And there are three scenes. The central scene is who's underneath the cross of the crucifixion of Jesus, who is becoming the Christ. Those mysteries and knowing who those people are in their previous incarnations and their future incarnations actually give us the crux. It gives us the fulcrum of all of evolution through those beings. Now, St. John was under the cross, but we're told none of the apostles are there. So who's St. John? St. John was really never called St. John. As a matter of fact, the St. John Gospel is not, they don't, his name never comes up. He's called the beloved disciple. He's called the one the Lord loved. Many different, the one who laid his head upon the breast of the Lord. He has many different names. But he, who is he really? He is Lazarus raised from the dead. After 3.5 days, Christ raised him from the dead, and he became the beloved disciple. And Mary Magdalene, some say, became the wife of Jesus. Remember, she's not the prostitute. She had evil spirits cast out of her by Christ, but we don't know what those were. And her sister was a very righteous person. And Mary, we have the mixed views of the story of the horror and the story of Mary Magdalene mixed together. But in the end, who was it that came to the grave first? Mary Magdalene. Who was it that saw Christ raised from the dead, called him the gardener, because she didn't recognize him, Mary Magdalene? Who was it that sat with the other Marys and the mother of Jesus in the upper room and warned the apostles of what was about to come and told them and continuously told them what Jesus has said? The apostles ignored what Jesus said. Mary, the mother of Jesus, we call her Mary Sophia or the Virgin Sophia, and the other three Marys, including Mary Magdalene, they were the core that understood Jesus's teachings. Peter was gone. Everybody was gone except John the Beloved, we would call him, or the one Jesus loved, St. John, Lazarus raised, and Joseph of Arimathea, who brought supposedly the grail from the Holy of Holies from the temple in Jerusalem to catch the blood of Christ to fulfill the mysteries of Christ. And then, of course, Nicodemus in his dreams, and then later helped Joseph of Arimathea prepare the body of Jesus. So there were very few men, but there were three men in a way, and there was Mary and the three Marys, and that's debatable how many Marys stood on the cross because there's different descriptions. But the point is, Lazarus was raised from the dead. That's why he was able to witness Christ die on the cross. You could only witness the reality, the spiritual reality of Christ dying on the cross, if you were highly initiated. The mother of Jesus was the greatest initiate on the earth at that time. And that's the reason she was able to witness it, as well as receive the wisdom of Jesus, which was developed in his 30 years, given over to Mary, which is another mystery that is discussed by Rudolf Steiner, Theosophists, and others. And many people discuss these things, but they don't give explanations for them. Rudolf Steiner does, which is great, a great help. So the Gospel of St. John is an initiation gospel. And you don't need to know anything about what I'm talking about. You don't need to know. The next section we're going to go into is the Q document. They call St. John Gospel is the Q document. The reason is because they say the sayings of Jesus came from the Gospel of John, and that it was either before or after the other synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Well, the Gospel of St. John had the true gnosis wisdom in it because Lazarus raised to St. John, the beloved, understood it because he had been initiated by Christ. And all of the wisdom of all the Gnostics, of all the pre-Christian, all the pagan religions, all the mythologies were all gathered together in Egypt, where Jesus spent his childhood, as you remember, when he left Jerusalem, went to Egypt, to Heliopolis, and was there taught all of that wisdom, which later became the rites of Memphis Mizraim, the 90-some rites of Memphis Mizraim, and was taught by to Ormus, an Alexandrian priest who put it into the Masonic rituals that we have today, inspired by Mark, literally by the Apostle Mark. So some of these Gnostics say that they knew the apostles and they wrote these fantastic gospels. Well, this Gospel of St. John is almost what they would call an apocryphal gospel, that it didn't make the collection of the other gospels because it didn't agree with them, or that it didn't make the collection of the rest of the stories in the New Testament. But John's three epistles, very consistent. The Apocalypse of John, very consistent with pre-Hebrew apocalypse traditions. Every step, every phase of the way is in there. Many of the same descriptions given in Daniel or given in the Apocalypse of St. John to demonstrate one thing. When you said you had an apocalypse, it meant you were initiated, and in the Hebrew tradition, that meant you were a prophet. And the only way you judge a prophet is by whether his words are true. And if they're not true, you stone them to death. But if they're true, you raise them up and they serve even higher than the king. And they actually lead the nation. Because in those days, divine right of kings, later it became, but in those days, it was the divine right of prophets. If you didn't have a direct connection with God, you could predict the future and you were correct, then you were killed. Why? Because you opened your mouth and you made prophecies that were true. And so in those days, there was no such thing as untruthfulness. In the days of Hammurabi, for instance, in Samaria, they had votive stones that were obelisks, and on them were written the Hammurabi Code, the laws of Hammurabi. And if you read them to yourself silently, what we call now silent reading, you could be killed. All things written in stone, the votive stones, are because you went to the stone like the pillars of Egypt, like the pillars of Greece had in it a message to look at the god or goddess that was in the front of the temple. But all the temple pillars of the Egyptians that had hieroglyphs on them, every one of them was a complete description of the spiritual world, but we don't understand 95% of what those images mean. But they had to be read aloud, because reading silently might cause confusion in your mind, which would lead to evil, because it would lead to phantoms, specters, and even demons. If you read about laws that you didn't understand and you incorporated them as a judge, you're working for demons. So we, through materialism, are taught in our schools, we're taught even in our churches, spiritual materialism, we're taught that this, we should hang on to this life, that, you know, that the grave is cold and dark. We are taught the craziest materialistic views that, you know, don't believe in anything to do with human repeated lives on earth. Some we call it reincarnation. You have to be careful with that word. But the point is that any rightfully thinking mind would has to come to the assumption that repeated human lives have to be necessary for karma and destiny to work out what we see just as the things that happen in the material world. But as we look at the rest of the material world with the minerals, the plants, and the animals, if we don't understand that those three kingdoms built up our physical body, our etheric body, and our astral body, then we don't use our ego, our body of the I am, which in the John Gospels, there are seven I am statements. And so this John Gospel is all about initiation. The first 14 lines are about creation. The rest are about seven miracles and seven I am statements, and then the experience under the cross. And the seven I am statements are very bold. They're the boldest thing that any human has ever said, basically that you are God. And it's in the article, so you can read them. And the seven miracles are also in there. And those miracles are really the parts of yourself you need to heal. And that's the beauty of this gospel. You don't need to know anything. You just need to read it. And
what it is, it's a path of initiation. And for someone who maybe has just started their spiritual paths, what do we mean by that? A path of initiation. And why would reading St. John or other spiritual passages like this help in the evolution of your own humanity?
Well, Tyler, would you be kind enough to read us the first 14 lines, which the anthroposophists, theosophists, the theosophers, and many people for thousands of years, since the words were written, have believed that these words alone are all that you need for initiation.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by Him, and the world knew Him not. He came into His own, and His own received Him not. But as many as received Him, to them He gave power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on His name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth.
As Rudolf Steiner says, you must take every single word in the Gospel of John for being not only truth, but for also mystery wisdom. So we could go line by line and show what that means. Now, the only thing that I would add is that in ancient India, when they said word, they meant Vak, V-A-C. That is the goddess who created the twin sets of male and female, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and their mates. And Vak is female. Vak is the word. Vak is what went out from the unmanifest. In other words, all things manifest. We would call that Sophia, or the great goddess. And then it breaks it down into the fact that it says that God then created the Word, and the Word is us, and we are God. Well, that is the full circle of all points of initiation in all initiations. That is the prodigal son. That is the spirit, the soul uniting with the spirit and returning to where it came from, heaven. And that very clearly, it says that this world down here is, as Jesus Christ said, not his Father's kingdom. So when we are wrestling with these forces down here, we shouldn't be saying, why did God do this to us? This is the realm that Lucifer has fallen into. This is the realm that Ahriman has fallen into since 1840, and the Asuras come in. And when you basically are unconscious and you're doing things and letting machines do it for you, you're letting the Asuras eat you up. How much of you is going to be left? Well, if you keep reading this over and over, you'll realize that you're God or goddess, God, goddess, whatever you want to put it as the highest divine. But you are that. That's all you have to remind yourself. Just keep reminding yourself that that is what you're doing, and you're down here working in the darkness, and you are light. That light cannot be extinguished, and that light is inexhaustible, and all of that is implicit in these 14 lines. So that's the beauty of it. And we said in our discussions with each other, what can we do for people? And so out of a deep, deep initiation that I just went through, I was told, give them three stages. First, they have to understand discernment. Second, they have to understand evil, but not associate with evil. Don't give over to evil, and don't think you're going to win against evil. You'll win some battles, but you won't win the war at this point. Evil is down here, and it's running rampant. And until you read the apocalypse and you become initiated, when does that happen? Anytime you want. So the Gospel of Sophia, three books. The first one prepares you to teach you how to become a true seeker. This two next books, the Gospel of Sophia, Volume 1, 2, and 3, talk about initiation, the kind of initiation we're talking about, give you all the details, and then literally gives you an initiation, and then in the end gives you a variety of languages that you can use to speak to the spiritual world, which have been given as sacred wisdom in the past.
And not all of those are from Christian works. They're a wide variety, because we encourage you to find the path that resonates with you in this incarnation. That's the path to follow. And also to be careful not to jump from path to path. You see that a lot with spiritual seekers. They'll say, okay, well, I'll try this, you know, okay, well, let me go over here and try this. Well, no, you need to find one and stick with it and practice.
And it shouldn't be so complicated. It should be simple enough. For instance, one of the simplest things you can do is create an eternal prayer. The eternal prayer is basically what is taught in Indian philosophy is repeating a mantra over and over. So if you would have met one of the old Indian teachers that came to America, they would usually give you one name. And then you would take that name and you would say it, Ananda, over and over. Ananda means joy. And so they would know that you needed joy. So if you say joy, 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 over and over and over again, you become joy. There's no way not to, because you'll think joy, you'll speak joy, you'll see joy, you'll act. Well, what you need to focus on are the seven holy virtues, focus on mercy and compassion and love, and realize that when you change homeopathically, you have the capacity to change the whole world. When they take a giant vat of silicic acid or amorphous silicon, and it's liquid at a certain temperature, they take one teensy tiny crystal from a real crystal, a real quartz crystal. They drop it in the vat, and the whole vat turns to that. From one tiny, tiny, tiny speck, there's a crystallization process that can happen that can affect every human on the face of the earth. And people think that that's nuts, but it's not. Now, the simple way to look at that is the lady who painted that beautiful picture that shows Hiram on the left. Hiram Abiff built Solomon's temple. And in this picture, the Queen of Sheba is coming, delivering the Holy Grail to Solomon because he's the wisest man in all the world. And she, the Queen of Sheba, has everything in the world, including the Holy Grail. And so here's Hiram, and he's kneeling down. And what is transpiring, it has everything to do with what happened in the cross. I'm not going to get into the great detail of this because it gets really a bit too much for people to handle. But let's just simply say that Hiram Abiff, the man who in that incarnation was the master builder, but in the end, just before the building was finished, the three apprentices killed him. But it's okay. He went into the molten sea. He went into where Christ went, the 3 days of death, down into the earth. And when he raised up, he became the raised master. And this is a tradition that is in all of Masonry. All of Freemasonry is based upon the raising of Hiram Abiff, the master. Well, that is later Lazarus. And the other people in the picture are also on the left-hand side with Hiram, are also in the picture in the people underneath the cross. But then the picture on the right, and the grail is shown there. Joseph of Arimathea is catching the grail, and some of the blood is dripping into the earth, and that the mothers of the earth are catching the blood of Christ. But in the third picture, this is a triptych, and on the right side of the triptych is, again, Lazarus John in an incarnation before he was Christian Rosenkreutz, being raised by the 12 leaders of the world who have been sacrificing their life to service the world for a long time, for millennia. So I'm not going to go into who all that was, but in this one picture, it's just like the Gospel of John. There is no end to it. Trust me, there is no end to what you can find in that picture of Edith Marion that Rudolf Steiner told her what to paint. There are things in there that will blow your mind if you can get a good copy of it and look very closely at it. And if you then know what transpired between the ancient pre-Hebrew, what happened underneath the cross, the mystery of Golgotha, and who was there, so Adam and Eve were there, and the new Adam and Eve were there. Hiram Abiff was raised to John the Beloved. He was there. So you have happening the redemption on the, instead of the old tree of life had to be protected from Adam and Eve, and they ate the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, the tree, the wood that Christ was crucified on, became the tree of knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life. And when all of this transpired, it was the crux of all of history. So if you have a cosmology that doesn't describe the moment that is the primal moment, the most important moment in all of humanity's development, basically the earth's development, we are at the exact middle point. And when Christ came, things changed. The earth was dying and it would have gone into entropy. But after Christ's blood poured into the earth was redeemed. And then Christ went into the earth for 3 days into what is called the bosom of Abraham, where all the Jews who had died were waiting for the Messiah. Well, he was the Messiah. He came to them and witnessed to them. They could witness him. And then when he rose up, he went to the throne, but he also then came back to the earth and is now literally around the earth. You can imagine Christ literally wrapping his arms around the entire earth and can appear in multiple places at multiple times to help people of any way through his spirit. And other very great details can be given about this that demonstrate that what these teachers in the past have said about Christ being in the etheric realm of the earth, in the living realm of the earth would no longer be living if it wasn't for Christ. But materialism is causing people to go into gray shadow thinking instead of spirit wisdom or fiery spirit wisdom, or however you want to call it, into the wisdom that Saint Michael has brought down to the earth. So when Michael fell to the earth with the Ahrimanic being and materialism started to rule, at the same time, the great wisdom of the past was translated and sent into the West so that the West could have basically what was never available before, which is the wisdom of the cultures that had gone before them, that had passed away, some that right before our very eyes people can't understand. For instance, as I just said, the hieroglyphs of the Egyptians are not understood. So we don't understand the past, our recent past. Well, how can that possibly be? How can we be so daft that we forget history? Well, it's happened again and again. I'm not going to go into that. But as we are now in an apocalyptic age, and we're seeing the demise of the Western hemisphere, or in Western civilization, which unfortunately hung on to Roman civilization for way too long. And as somebody said, in the apocalypse, who's the Whore of Babylon? Someone asked one of our readers in a question, and I said, answered back, well, for John, it's very simple. The Whore of Babylon was the Vatican. It was Romanism, the previous culture, the Greco-Roman culture, hung on to for too long with too much power and too much pervasive, basically, propaganda and control through fear and religion. So that's what the Vatican is. So if you imagine the Vatican being spread out all over the earth with its legalism, you know, they invented law, and with its encyclicals, which means whatever they say is always true and always rules, and there's no other higher authority, then you can see that this is filtered into our age, and it's the last patriarchal hanging on to the past of Romanism. And we should be glad to see the fall of the Western civilization, but it's very sad when we're inside of it.
When we look at the big picture, we can understand now why it was so important that we would leave our spiritual writings, Douglas, which we were doing almost as soon as we met back in 2011, and then produced our first work in 2014. But we saw all around us that the world seemed to be very confused and that people didn't seem to be aware of what was really going on. We felt it was important that we go into the internet. I mean, we had to enter into the machine. We really didn't want to do that, but it had to be done so that we could reach as many people as we could to explain some very basic things, that false flags or propaganda run by the state. And, you know, and then step by step, walking with the Trump victory twice. Of course, right now he's not in position. There is struggling going on as to who is going to control America. We don't even know what that struggle looks like because we don't have a media that tells us truth, which is the very thing we pointed out in the very beginning when we started, that false flags are legal propaganda. So the government is propagandizing us. Then we did some research, we did some more, and we found that we didn't win the American Revolutionary War the way we thought. Now, that was a big pill for us to swallow because we kind of had heard this through the internet vines throughout time, but to really see it ourselves and see the research, then it was, well, what is our world? What is the truth of our world? And if you've been following the American intelligence media for these years, you see that what we've really produced is a history book based on truth. Because each layer of research that we've done, we've blasted away the propaganda that was given us for decades, if not centuries, until we get to what truth is. We still have to continue the research, but now it seems to be most important that we walk across the bridge, so to speak, and embrace Christianity again, because it has been under attack for 2,000 years. And their next wave of attacks on Christianity has the objective of rolling everything up into a one world religion that would be headed by a Jesuit Pope.
I liked what you said about conversation. At some point you were pointing out it is a conversation, you know, and Jesuits don't have conversations. They have plans and plots and hidden agendas. And Remember, in the old days, a Jesuit was already forgiven for any sin he might commit, including killing others for the Pope. So you're working with a militaristic group, and that kind of militarism went right into banking. We can go into great detail about that, but the Knights of Malta then is what we have as the result of that. And later, now we have the World Economic Forum. It's basically always the same thing. The richest people get together in an insider group and do their thing. But how can we combat that? Well, it's very simple. In the ancient times, in the Hyperborean Age, there were two pillars when you went through initiation. One was soft and pliable, and you could depress it with your hand. The other one was hard and cold. So the one on the left was warm, and the one on the right was cold and hard. And that was it. There's your initiation. Well, what does that mean? In the past, that was showing people that they actually too have two sides to themselves. You know, one a feminine, mercy, and one a very hard male, severity. That's what the Hebrews believed in. So you'll find their two pillars of Joachim and Boaz representing mercy and severity. Well, in our age, what does that represent? It represents Lucifer and Ahriman. Now, it gets a little crazy when I start to reference Ahriman because people don't understand that. Lucifer, we think we understand, but we don't understand fully. As a matter of fact, one of the smartest people I know said something the other day, which I have to find a Steiner reference for it. He says that Lucifer also comes with love. Lucifer is cold selfishness. He is light that does not go out. It's light that is contained light. That is selfishness. That's what you do when you think about only yourself, right? So on the left-hand side, and not female, don't look at it that way, but let's just look at it left and right, and then in the middle. So on the left-hand side, Lucifer tries to pull you out of your body into a world of illusion. That's where Maya exists. And now the materialism can tell you that it's infinite and that you're going to have to live to be very old, like all of the billionaires want to live to be very old so they can spend their money. And that's the delusion of Maya. And that's the delusion of Lucifer. But Lucifer was the highest angel, but he desired to have the seat of the one God, this like a solar throne, not necessarily just the only limit of divinity. But anyway, he wished to have that throne, and so he tried to replicate that, and for that, he was then cast down to the earth. In a way, not to say, you know, you're so awful, but you know, what you're doing is backwards. So if you really want to do that, you have to go down to the material plane. So, you know, Lucifer's down here. Now, Lucifer can be found in your thought. It can be found in your wild ideas. It can be found in your ability to also understand knowledge. But you won't get to any wisdom with Lucifer's help. Well, the Saint Michael, who is the face of Christ, is in the middle of those two pillars, and he has cosmic wisdom. That is his rulership. It's ruled through the sun. And it comes down in cyclic periods, seven cycles of the archangels, each being around 360 years, creates 1/12 of the Platonic year, 25,920. So literally, it comes down to cycles. So the archangel right now, since 1879, is the Archangel Michael, who is the sun archangel who brings the wisdom of Christ. Who is wisdom? If you study the Gospel of Sophia, you'll find out that the name wisdom means Sophia. That is the translation for the word wisdom. And whether it be Shekinah, whether it be Inanna, whether it be the great goddess, whether it be a Sibel or Ops or Athena or Diana or on and on and on. The feminine in religion was squashed. It was hidden. It was devalued. And the female was made then simply the consort of the male. Complete nonsense. As I said before, if you study the word and you understand the Gnostic understanding of the word, you'll understand it as the manifestation of the unmanifest God in the manifest world. In other words, everything in the manifest world is feminine. Sorry, but that's just what all the traditions say. So when we're talking about the word, Christ, Michael, being in between the two pillars, it means don't go too far to the left to Lucifer, and then don't go too far to the right to Ahriman. Now, who's Ahriman? in 1840. He came down to the earth, and some say that soon, or maybe even now, he will incarnate physically and literally try to incarnate in the internet to become the super artificial intelligence. Now, you can believe that to whatever degree you want, but the point is, as an analogy, it is true. The human ego is being given up so that a super AI, a super artificial intelligence, so we give up human intelligence for artificial intelligence to tell us what to do, just like you do with a guru. I give up, in the ancient past, you gave up your own ego to follow the guru. You gave up your ego to follow the priest. You gave up your ego to follow the monarchy. You gave up your ego to follow whatever tribe you're in. So you give up your ego and you follow whoever it is that you give it to. You want to give it to Lucifer? You won't really get much done, but you'll have wild thoughts in your head, and it oftentimes leads to insanity if you go too far. If you want to give to Ahriman, you have what we've described as hypermaterialism and evil, and how that works, we've given you the exact descriptions. So if you go too far with Ahriman, you basically turn off the lights in the etheric realm. So the light that you were supposed to bring to the etheric realm after your life on Earth is nothing. It's not a spark. It's not a candlelight, let alone a conflagration, a giant bonfire. No, you bring nothing. Just like every night when you sleep, if you do not have dreams or gone through stages of having dreams, or you cannot review your day before you go to sleep so that you don't have any bad karma with people, because that's what you're supposed to do, get down on your knees or do your prayers where you review your day and say, did I do harm to others? Well, if you can do it backwards, in exact backwards order, then you are so ready for the spiritual world that you can actually commune with them. So to avoid materialism on the right-hand side is to avoid the seven deadly sins. To stay in the middle is the seven virtues. That's the Christ in the middle of those two pillars. But to go to the left, oh my goodness, spiritual materialism can fool you. So that you can easily believe, like I did, that if I went to the Catholic Church every Sunday and I believed that that priest had an experience, then I was going to possibly go to heaven if I, you know, do the, if I go to confession and if I do their seven sacraments and, you know, if I get confirmed and if I have, you know, Holy Eucharist and blah, 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 then I don't have to do anything. Except in confession, I might have to confess and try to act like I'm going to be better. But basically, I give it over to somebody else, okay? Well, that's what you can do to Lucifer. And oh my, Lucifer has every type of cult imaginable ready to accept your ego. Look at the Pope. The Pope keeps telling people how to live. He tries to be the ego of the world. He tries to tell America we have to drop our borders. He tries to preach what the because he's a Jesuit, he preaches apocalyptic theology, that this is the end, and he also preaches liberation theology, which is socialism or Marxism. And it's hard to believe that a religion is overtly doing such, but that's what a religion does. It controls the ego. Now, there are religions that could be good, and I'm not going to get into those, and I don't bash any religion with too much vehemence, but I would say that there can be holy people in every single religion. So every true traditional religion can have holy people in it, great saints who can transcend and ascend. But for us, we stand in the middle and we try to get rid of our doubt, our hatred, and our fear. Lucifer is in our doubt. But if you can have faith based upon trust, Lucifer can be turned, according to some, into the Holy Spirit. And if you have hatred in your heart, then unfortunately, the Asuras are eating up everything you do, so you don't even find yourself in your heart. You don't even know you have a heart. The only place that you actually come to consciousness is in your heart and right next to your heart, but no, you ignore it for your head. So the Asuras are eating you up through your head by all of your gadgets and by all of your letting the lower beings who live in electromagnetism come in and eat you. But if you have hope in your heart, that is the little box. That is what Pandora closed and hope was left. If you have hope in your heart, you can defeat the Asuras and you can stop hatred. And fear, everywhere we look, the way that we are controlled is through fear. So if you want to see if it's propaganda, see if it instills fear. Pharmaceuticals, they instill fear so that you desire a pill to take, which has a side effect which can kill you.
The pharmaceutical companies using the mainstream media and the propaganda, that's what creates the fear.
Exactly.
The pharmaceutical companies create the bioweapons, and the bioweapons are there for global genocide. Basically, the pharmaceutical companies that we're paying to supposedly heal us have had a long-term program to exterminate humanity. Pharmaceutical companies are evil, outright evil. And the propaganda that's spewed is there to confuse people, to create fear, doubt, and hatred, and walk us right over the abyss.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Tylem. Absolutely. Fear. People don't understand. I finally realized when I looked at people, what drove most people? Fear. Fear of the future that they don't even think about, but they're afraid of it. They're terrified of it. They're terrified of dying. They don't even think they're going to die. When you tell some people you're going to die, they will look at you like you're crazy because they have never, ever once thought that. They aren't going to consider that until it happens or after it happens. And they make no plans for who they would be after they died if they were in a realm where they would have to be a free consciousness, not bound by the physical. And so fear drives most people. And that's where the realm of Ahriman is. Because just as you said, the petrochemical pharmaceutical companies are pure evil, just like Ahriman. And Ahriman is death. Ahriman wants to kill you. There is no love in Ahriman. Ahriman is hatred. So if you have love, then you immediately dispel Ahriman. So if you have love, what do? You think about others. You don't think about getting love, because that's not love. If you have love, it flows through you as a will force of the divine through mercy and grace. It's not you. If you think for a minute you're love, and that you own it, you are mistaken. It is a common substance flowing through all of the hierarchy. But Ahriman has no love. And Lucifer has no faith. He's become blind. And he can't see Christ. And Ahriman can't see Christ. And Ahriman's little helpers, the Asuras, cannot see Christ. So if you can simply see your higher self, the Christ in you, if you can simply see that your soul is uniting with your spirit, like in the apocalypse, the Lamb is wedding the Virgin descending in the New Jerusalem, where you don't have to eat or drink and it's daylight all times, and the rivers of life flow out from the tree of life, and you marry the greatest being of wisdom that you possibly could, and you have defeated your seven chakras, the seven deadly sins, and made them into the seven holy virtues, and you have married your higher self. And that is what the apocalypse is. And that is what you can get out of the Gospel of St. John by simply reading it. You don't have to understand what these things that I'm saying. And you know, all the breakdown that we give for you is just so that you can have some possible images. But just like we do in the Gospel of Sophia, as Tyler said, we give you languages from all the sacred religions, and you decide which 22 letters you wish to use in your own language to speak to the divine, because you can't speak with words down here in the material realm.
Now, when we wrote our books, we wanted to make sure everybody had them. So we have made them so that you can download them and you can have a PDF copy. That's great. Get a copy. And there are plenty of places that I post those copies. But I also encourage you to get a printed copy. And we made them as inexpensive as we could. It's just the paper and the mailing. And in fact, you can't take the PDF copy and go down to the supply store, the office supply store, and have those things printed any cheaper than you can get a print book. And the reason I encourage you to do that is that this is your spiritual journey. You need to get off that computer. It's filled with distractions. It's filled with lights and just so much garbage. Give yourself an hour and a half. Take the book. And if it's not our book, take a book that has some meaning to you, resonates, put you in a higher place when you leave it, and study the book. And when I was working with Steiner and Douglas, of course, you're a lot smarter. You probably didn't have to do it the way I did it. I would get those books out and I'd have my highlighter and I'd dog ear it and I would go back and reread passages and I would write my notes. And we left plenty of places for you to write your notes, to keep your own diary, so to speak, of your journey. And then what's so fascinating is when you go back to that book, maybe you put it aside for a while, then you come back to it. And you see those things that you dog-eared and those notes that you made. It helps you ground yourself of where you've been and how your thinking may have changed. Now, they don't want us to read books anymore or hold books anymore, because if we put everything up there digitally, it's easy. They just remove it. I mean, look at the presence of President Trump and everything that he did over the last 4 years. It's all been removed from the internet. I mean, was he really a president? Did he really exist? So it's very important that we hold on to 3D things, things that we can hold. Some things are not meant to be in digital space. I would say spiritual books. I would say money. We don't have any business putting money out there. Money needs to be real. We need to hold it. This is why we encourage our audience to get silver if you can, or gold, or some kind of asset that you can hold on to. We're not coming into the storm. We are in the storm. Things are going to be different. We're counting on the 48 people. We know you're there. The 48 of you that have taken the studies over the last 4-5 years seriously, and you are prepared. You prepared your biosphere. That would be your personal space that you're living that might extend out into your community. But you're trying to fortify that to make it a beautiful place to be and for people to come and for you to nourish others when the total collapse is there. People are going to be nourished, need to be nourished in many ways, but don't forget, the most important nourishment right now is your spiritual nourishment.
That is so true. And you just brought to mind the fact that Rudolf Steiner pointed out that you can get initiated a few ways. One, you can grow a garden. And you made reference to, you know, grow your own food. I mean, well, really, just that alone could awaken you.
Even if all you have is an apartment balcony and you don't have any sun or something, try it, because, and do it from a seed. Don't go out and get something that's already grown. Take that seed, put that seed in your mouth, put your spit on it, then place it in the dirt or place it in the rock wool for your hydroponics. And as it grows, meditate on what that is.
And it's the beauty of it. You see the etheric. You see a power. I mean, it's a miracle. If you don't look at a seed and then look at the tree that it grew into and see that that was a miracle, then you're missing it. Now, it's an invisible miracle because it happened over time, and you have to see the seed over time until it becomes a tree, and then it becomes an acorn, and it falls, and it becomes another tree.
But it also helps you understand who you are. You see, my dear friends, you are a seed. You're in the earth right now. You don't know all that you're going to become, but there are forces all around you that want to keep you in the dark. And Christ, that light, that warmth, is drawing you out of your grave. And so you pull those forces are pulled out, and then you become. And who do you become? We do not know who we are as human beings. We've been suppressed for so long. But once we're free and we can grow like the seed that you're growing and you're meditating on, you will become this amazing human being.
So true. And that amazing human being, if you watch a child grow over time, Steiner said that was another initiation. And I got to do that as a Waldorf teacher. And it was just, it's miraculous. You cannot predict what a child will do. And then the other thing you can do is study the foundation stone. I won't go into that, but you can look for that if you want. Or you can study the Gospel of St. John. So there it is for everyone. The Gospel of St. John is a path of initiation. You don't need anyone to take you through it. It's just like our book, Gospel Self, Sophia, is self-initiation. So I'm going to go back to where we started. Theosophia. That's the sentient soul. There's three parts to your soul. In the old days, if you looked out on the world and you saw the wisdom there, you called it Theosophia. And then when it became the intellectual soul and people looked inside themselves and they got a philosophy, the Greeks called it Philosophia, or I love Sophia, I love wisdom. And then in today's age, we're in the consciousness soul and we call it Anthroposophia. It means the wisdom of the human being. What are you going to do with the wisdom? You need to change yourself from an human into an angel. It is your job to merge with Sophia, to commune with Sophia. And Rudolf Steiner said that what we needed now was to understand cosmic Christ. And to understand cosmic Christ, the number one thing that you needed was the wisdom of Christ. The Sophia of Christ is what he said. And so in our time, seek that wisdom wherever you can. And that is the antidote to materialism and untruthfulness. It is the direct initiation, and it is the simplest path. And that's what we wanted to give you as a gift to get through these hard times.